Good evening, everybody. James McKenna here with my Science Hour, March 25th, 2021. And tonight, first opening story, I'm going to go right into this, the issue at the southern border. This is horrendous. Now, I want to give you an idea of the scale of what is going on. Even CNN is reporting that they cannot get access to the border. I mean, CNN is the basically the right arm of the Democratic Party. The advertising media for the Democratic Party, and it's the situation is so bad that they will not let anybody there. The government is putting out footage, and it is really oddly reminiscent of what they did at Sandy Hook, where they had the kids all lined up walking and like a little parade. And you'll notice that in this footage that the government released and did not allow any other reporters in there and did not allow these the people who did the footage to talk about anything. They're under gag orders. But they all have the same shoes. And I notice this because they don't show kids. They just show kids walking. I mean, it could be any place. You could not see the facility. You couldn't see anything. And there was an adult walking with them. I mean, this could be kids in California walking in a parade. I mean, there's no way of knowing where this is. But they all had the same tennis shoes. Now, what's the possibility that kids coming from Mexico all have the same tennis shoes? Anyway, it's just a bizarre note. But here are the reported numbers. They have a facility there that's capable of handling 250 unaccompanied children. They reported that they were overflowing with 4,000, but from what I can gather, just from my own, I will just call it my own sources, there are about 15,000. So what happened is when Biden became president, the day that Trump walked out and Biden walked in, the word went out, and the people who had been waiting for 2-3 years in Mexico simply went to the border. And they just started walking, and so estimated came across the border in February. It was about 100,000, and that was an estimate. But I believe what happened in January, see, they're not reporting, there was probably around 5 to 6 times that. So to date, including the number of people that are coming in constantly in March, there's probably about 1 million people. Illegal immigrants that have come through the southern border. And what the parents are doing is they're just bringing their kids there, and I don't know, however they get them there, and just dumping them off. So the real numbers, now those are the reported numbers. The real numbers are probably 15,000 unaccompanied children, about potentially to date, around 1 million people who have crossed the southern border, because here was what was going on. They had been waiting in camps that were held in Mexico, and Mexico has even approached the Biden administration about this, saying, hey, what are you doing? And then Joe Biden hands this off to his illustrious Vice President Kamala Harris, and she just laughs. And her comment is on just a comment to the news media. Oh, well, the people shouldn't come now, instead of having international relations with Mexico, where they actually go in and talk to them and prevent this on both sides of the border. That's the only way to do this, is diplomacy on both sides of the border, because the people are simply getting up and walking out of these camps to the border. Now, here's the other issue. They have been testing these, and I don't believe that the test is even accurate, but there's something like 40 to 60% of these people have COVID. That is the report. But then there's also pneumonia, tuberculosis, which is common in Mexico, and potentially cholera, which I used to live in Mexico. I remember coming into a town, and there would be a sign, cholera, do not stop. So you could not stop in that town. I mean, you didn't even want to go near that place because, cholera is something that's generated in human feces. It gets into the water system, contaminates it, and then the other people get sick. And it's something, believe me, you do not want. I personally have not had it in my ventures, and that's because I had to be very careful of places I went to, and especially when I was younger. I was literally living in Mexico City in good modern conditions, but when I traveled, you were just any place. It was impossible to plan ahead. So anyway, the situation at the border is horrendous. And there's a little fun fact that, for example, the number of the population growth in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, is around 100,000 new births per month. So that means that in the number of people they were sending to the United States prior to Trump was around 100,000 per month. And so that means they could provide that number of people as illegal immigrants into the United States forever, unabated. These are numbers that, I mean, to think this is not a humanitarian crisis, and these people are coming into the country, they have no place to go, they have no skills, they have no money, they have nothing, and they're just walking in and with no place to go. It's stated that the Pentagon has talked about keeping some of these at their facilities, but they're going to run out of room very soon. They simply don't have facilities to house millions of people. So this is every month hitting more people than, let's say, they say 100,000, but that number is just not possibly correct, not even possibly correct. I'm not going to talk any more about this. The news media, of course, is not able to access the border to see what's really going on. Apparently, they have makeshift locations that are under bridges and other places where these people just walk up to get processed. There's a 72-hour hold and release. In other words, after 72 hours, the Biden administration has said they have to release these people. So they simply release them. You know, a million people coming into the country completely undocumented, and this is going to continue unabated into the future. There's a real problem here, both for these people and for the people in the United States. So anyway, chaos reigns. That's all I can say. It's absolutely insane. Tonight I wanted to talk mainly about water rights. And I wrote a book about 10 years ago now. It's called Water. Water is the name of the book. I'll be talking a bit about that. But I wanted to jump into a scientific topic here first. Today it was released that, maybe a year ago, scientists released a picture, what they said was a picture of a black hole. Now, this is at the heart of the Messier object. Messier is a catalog of astronomical objects, typically big objects, galaxies and nebulae, etc. And so they're cataloged in this Messier catalog. So Messier catalog number 87 is a galaxy. 87 is the whole galaxy, but the heart of the galaxy. Astronomers made a network of telescopic equipment around the world, and created a single communication network for these telescopes, and put that into a databank, and then produced what they called was a picture of a black hole at the center of this galaxy. And of course, that really received a great deal of fanfare. And today I noticed something. Well, just to finish out the story, today they released what they said was a map of polarized light around this, what they called the event horizon. Okay, so anyway, I'll talk about that in a minute, the science of polarized light, etc. However, it never really dawned on me before, and it finally did, that the image they showed is exactly like the image that NASA's Hubble Space Telescope took of Comet Hale-Bopp. It's that swirling motion, and it's the motion of a large comet. And so anyway, visually, this alleged black hole looks like a comet. And that's what it is. A comet is an electrical discharge. And so in the intergalactic field, so this thing is like, remember the old discussion, there's a flea on the back of a flea, and that flea is on the back of a fly, which is on the back of a little monkey, which is on the back of an elephant. And it's kind of an image, it's like a little kid's, it's kind of a fairy tale or kind of a, like a little kid's jingle to give you the concept of size. Things are smaller and smaller and smaller, etc. And so in the world of comets and discharges of fusion-based capacitors, which is the basis of my work, you have, for example, in the solar capacitor, you can have dust grains that are discharging the solar capacitor. You can have small pieces of dust in an atmospheric condition on Earth where they generate electrical fields around that dust particle, and it creates a snowflake. So that's a form of a crystalline structure that's forming around a charged object that's discharging a local capacitor, which is exactly what a comet is. Although in space, the comets are not forming crystals in that sense, but they are forming diamonds on the nose side of the comet. So then you have things that are, say, 2 to 10 miles across, objects in outer space that are discharging the solar capacitor. Those are the small comets. Halley's nucleus is about 7 miles across, or in length, I should say. It's kind of a potato shape. And then you have the bigger ones, like Hale-Bopp was a relatively large planetary type of object. All of the planets in the solar system are discharging the solar capacitor, and the sun, these all revolve around the sun, of course. The sun is discharging the galactic capacitor, the capacitor that is built up by proton-based fusion-generated winds in the galactic environment. And we are way out on the edge, but that's where the sun gets its hydrogen, continually supplying its upper atmosphere where the fusion takes place. Okay, so the sun is acting as a comet. Jupiter and Saturn have their own proton-based winds, which allows objects like Io, for example, to function within that capacitor, causing a discharge of its local fusion-based capacitor. So Io, the local moon, the closest moon to Jupiter, is acting like a comet. Dione, which is a moon of Saturn, is doing the same thing. It's within the fusion-based capacitor of Saturn. So all of these are discharging their local capacitors, and so therefore are acting like comets. And so my point is that all of the stars which are in the galactic arms of the Milky Way, our galaxy, and in every galaxy, are discharging their local solar capacitor. And ultimately, there's a current that flows down the galactic arms. That's the basis of my Electric Highways to the Stars video, which I produced. I produced the public release of that in 2002. You can see that on my DVD collection on my webpage. The discharge or the electric currents that flow through the galactic arms as a basis for electromagnetic propulsion systems, passive electromagnetic propulsion systems that move between the stars. And that is one of my electric propulsion systems. It's a passive system. At any rate, then you get to this the galactic nucleus. And in the case of M87, it's in a local, fairly significant electric field. And it is acting like a comet. So notwithstanding, its nucleus looks exactly like the comet Hale-Bopp nucleus. When Hale-Bopp was first discovered, it was July 23rd, 1995. I think that's it. It was a July 15th. I don't remember the exact date. I have that in. I have an entire DVD dedicated to that topic of the discovery of Halebop, the public discovery, and then the real discovery was done 4 years earlier by Robert Harrington at the Naval Observatory. And but anyway, when it was first discovered, NASA, with the Hubble Space Telescope, took a picture of the comet Halebop, and it had this swirling look to it. That is exactly like the view of this alleged black hole M87. Okay, so I went to look at the information that they released about polarized light. And polarized light is something that light has, for example, if you put on a pair of Polaroid sunglasses, what happens is the wavelength of light, or the wave of light, has vertical and horizontal components. And what you do is you filter out the horizontal component, and it allows you, it gives you a much better vision of the source of the light. And in the case of, for example, I was once fishing with somebody, and I kept going, look at all the fish down there. Look at all the fish. And I'm like, I don't see any fish. They had polarized glasses, and so it cut out all the glare from the water and the top surface of the water reflecting light from the atmosphere, etc. And it cut out all of that glare, and they could see down and see all of the fish moving. And so that was interesting. But anyway, that's what polarized glasses do, like sunglasses, for your vision, especially when you're outside or you're at the beach. It cuts down that glare. So that's what they were doing. They were looking for polarized light from this black hole. Okay, so let me also talk about some of the other visible features of a black hole. And you will have material coming in and shooting out in jets. And these are typically perpendicular to the spiral plane of the black hole, because when things are spiraling in, they tend to concentrate in a plane based on the angular momentum of the material that is in the cloud around the black hole. So at any rate, that corresponds also then with the magnetic fields, and that is something you can determine by looking at the polarized light or the magnetic fields. There are other techniques. The Zeeman effect, for example, is the result of light leaving a location that has a magnetic field, and it causes a splitting of the lines. It's called the Zeeman effect. And so anyway, these various methods of looking at light tell you magnetic properties about the source. Anyway, the reason for talking about this is I wanted to mention that the view of this picture that they produced, this composite picture they produced of this black hole, Messier 87, and that was, like I say, about a year ago, looks exactly like the comet Halebop. And that makes perfect sense, because the galactic nucleus is discharging its local capacitor and acting like a comet. And so the electrical, the magnetic effects that you see are related to the electrical conditions, just like a comet in our solar system. They're all the same. It's matter of scale. The big ones are acting just the same visually. If you're at a distance, they're acting just the same as the smaller ones. Although if the electrical discharges are large enough, then you get a spiral electrical current as opposed to a lineal electrical discharge, etc. Okay, this next story is just makes you very sad. But in any way, there was this was in El Salvador, I believe, El Salvador. There was a young, I think about 20-year-old, maybe a little less, a few years less, maybe, a surfer, a young lady, and she was killed by lightning while surfing. Her uncle was apparently right next to her on a wave. And they were just doing some trial runs, I believe, for a competition. She was a Olympic hopeful, and they said she had very good chance of winning gold or medals at the Olympics in surfing. But lightning hit her, and just think about this. I mean, here she is, a wonderful, young, happy. They said she was just always a very bubbly person, etc., which most surfers are. They're kind of very, very happy people. And because of riding the waves and that the spirit of being that kind of person. But just imagine all the people in the world that you would just love to have lightning strike. George Soros, Bill Gates, to name a few. I mean, we all have our favorite list, and but I'm, like I say, of all the people on the planet that should be hit by lightning, and this young girl is hit by lightning. It just, things never really make much sense on this planet. And that's one of this very strange things of this whole world is, the people that are criminal and really, should be taken out and, survive, they do just great. And then here's some young, happy person that is hit by lightning, something, what are your chances of that? Anyway, I also wanted to mention, though, that now we're heading into springtime, spring storms, summer storms, the number one killer of people, of men, primarily women are out on the golf course too, but the number one killer of young men between the ages of like 18 and 35 is lightning on the golf course. So, and what do? You're out there on an open field. You're the top point. And this is the whole principle of discharging a capacitor, is that the closest point gets the current. And there you're out there with your bag full of either carbon or metal clubs, club heads. So there's typically some metal in there. You have metal spikes on your shoes, typically, going right into the ground. Great conductor, connecting you electrically with ground. And so what do you do, what do you not do in case of storms roll in on the golf course? First of all, the best thing you could do is if you're driving a golf cart is get in the golf cart, because that puts those rubber tires as an insulator between you and ground. And then put the pedal to the metal and get the heck off the golf course. Just don't take a chance. You can, you can golf another day. The other thing is do not go under a tree. A lot of times in a golf course, you have up along the side of the fairway or around the greens or the tee areas, you have trees and stuff, and go under the tree to get out of the rain. Bad idea. Do not step under a tree. And here's what happens. In the summertime, it's not uncommon. I mean, this happens all the time, that a farmer will lose a whole bunch of cows in a rainstorm when there's lightning. And what happens is the cows all go walk under the tree. They're not stupid. They want to get out of the rain. But they don't know about lightning. And so what happens is the electricity comes through the ground. It comes down the tree, out the roots, out into the ground, and then now it's traveling in the ground, and it travels up a leg that's closest to the source of the electricity where the tree is. It travels up that leg through their body across the heart, and it basically short circuits their heart and they die of a heart attack. The same thing happens with people. And you can be just turned a little bit one way or the other and the current comes up one side and down the other. And by the way, that's what Tesla was doing out at both his Wardenclyffe site and at the Colorado Springs site, was he was capturing atmospheric electricity and sending it through the ground. And what he had done is discovered the frequency, the resonant frequency of the Earth, so he knew what frequency to use to have the least amount of resistance, of AC resistance, or in correct terms, it's called impedance in electrical terms. And so that's what Tesla was doing. And you can transmit for a long distance. And of course, lightning comes in all frequencies. So that component that is the correct frequency can travel a very long way through the ground. That is the point. So if you're a golfer, if you're a farmer, if you're a worker outside, etc., if it's lightning, get away. Get under a shelter, get under someplace, but get out of that field because you are a connector. And especially if you have something metal, just remember the old tale of Benjamin Franklin. He took a kite out into a lightning storm, and he put a key up on the end of the kite, on the kite string. So the kite went up into the air in the lightning storm and just about killed him. He knocked the lightning came down the string of the kite to ground, and of course he's holding on to the string. And so anyway, that was a little different because he was holding it with one hand, and the lightning passed down that arm through his leg and down to the ground. So it didn't kill him. But if he'd have been holding that string with, say, both hands, I suspect he was holding it with his right hand because the heart is on the left side. If you were holding that string to the kite in your left hand, and that's another thing, just, you know, a lot of kids will go out now in the springtime with a kite. It's fun, the wind, and, you know, see the kite go up in the air. But just be careful of power lines, because power lines, high-tension power lines, are not insulated. There's no way they can insulate those when you've got 10,000 volts on them. And so if your line crosses that power line, believe me, it's not going to be good for the hometown team. So all of these things regarding lightning, also just a little bit of a tip. Now is springtime. You might be going out for the first time or relatively the first time this spring to work in the garden, to golf, to mow the lawn, to bicycle, to jog, to climb, to do whatever your sport is. And maybe you've even been in the gymnasium. And even if you're fit, you think you're fit in a gymnasium, the problem with exercising in a gym is that you are doing repetitions all in the same direction. When you're out and about in the garden or in the, say, chopping down a tree or some other physical event, that you're trying to do in the springtime, weeding, you know, fixing something, you're down on the ground underneath trying to fix something. Even though you think you're in shape from the gymnasium, you're really not when it comes to the muscle movement that happens when you're out in nature. So walking through the woods is very different than going on Stairmaster. Stairmaster, you're repeating, okay, do, and you're doing that same motion. But I've had people, I was up one time in the woods, in the northern woods, and these people came up to visit, and they were all, you know, gymnasium people. And so we went out for a walk in the woods. And after 5 minutes, they were like, oh my God, I'm tired. I can't believe this. Why am I so tired? It's because they weren't used to using their muscles in different directions. And I had been in the woods, that's how I called the woods was my gymnasium. And so I would be able to do a lot of things out in nature, whereas these people would not. Or things like, say, canoeing or boating or swimming, things like that. That when you're in nature, it's very different than doing laps. If, you know, in a pool where there's no waves. People that do laps probably are going to have a hard time swimming in a lake with waves. They're not used to it. Anyway, okay, just a little bit of that weekend warrior attitude. If you're golfing, don't try and hit the 300-yard drive the first time out. You know, build up to it. Get loose, do stretching exercises, etc. And so you're not in, you're not going to destroy your body on the first time out, is my point. But going back to this young lady, what can you say? I mean, the surfing community has kind of come together. I've not been a surfer. I've been around surfers a lot in various places where I've lived, and they're always very happy, very carefree type of people. But like I say, imagine all the people on the planet that you would love to have lightning hit. and it hits this beautiful young lady. Anyway, on to the next thing. Yeah, understanding this world is kind of difficult. Just a quick mention on products. Remember to email in your questionnaire if you're interested in a wing generator or one of the multi-blades. That's where we get started. And understand, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a primer here. Most of the people that I deal with today are strictly off-grid. If somebody comes and says, well, I want a grid connection, okay, I'll sell you that. But if the grid goes down, you're not going to have any electricity. What's your real goal? And the real goal of most people is to get off the grid and or to have backup so that if the grid goes down, they have power. So how do you do that? Well, there's lots of ways to do that. You can buy a generator. I'm a Generac dealer. I'm a dealer for EMENs and Clean Power and other Duramax and other generator manufacturers. So you can do that. Or if you really want to be off grid, because those require gasoline or propane or diesel or whatever, natural gas. And so when that runs out, then what do you do? Because without the fuel, that thing ain't going to run. The wind is something that's there on a long-term basis, and it's free, but it's expensive. To replace the amount of energy you take off the grid is going to take a fairly significant investment. And so the first thing I ask people is, what's your budget? And I'll give an example. A very nice couple lived on a farm, and they had budgeted $25,000 for they wanted to get wind system and backup. And they had a fairly big operation. They had a big farmhouse. They had a couple outbuildings. They have an art gallery building, apparently where they did artwork, etc. And they had a barn. But their budget was $25,000. And I'm like, you're not going to be able to do this. And so I'm just honest with them. I could find something to sell them for $25,000. That'd be, that's what some people might do, but I don't do that. I said, no, you just don't have enough money to do what you need. Very nice people, but that's the realism of getting off grid. I have another customer that looking at a system. It's going to be around a $200,000 bill by the time you get everything necessary to be truly off grid with a big house and a big operation in a remote area. And so that's with backup generators, Generac generators behind the wind system, two big banks of batteries, the wind system itself, and all of the other things that go along with it, the installation fee. All of these things add up. And so you need that level of money. Now, does everybody have to spend $200,000? No. There are some that are as low as $20,000. But that would be a very small, say a 10-kilowatt system that would provide backup power only for emergency things like fans and lighting and maybe running the fan on your furnace, refrigeration, computer communications like the Wi-Fi, etc. And that would do very nicely if you're only interested in something that's just a backup in case of emergency, and that's like $20,000 plus installation. And most people can install one of those themselves. And so there's really a wide range of power. But for example, I could have sold some equipment to this couple with the farm for $25,000, but it would not have accomplished their goals. Their goal was to be off grid. And with all of the electrical necessities they had, plus they had an older house, not energy efficient. That's something else you have to look at is, do you have an energy efficient building to begin with? The older, even current construction does not have good ecological sound architecture to put, the contractors and the designers of today don't worry about your energy use. You got to just pay your energy bill and they don't even think about it. They try and put in some energy efficient. Most products like refrigerators and appliances are energy efficient today, but they still take energy. You cannot build a dishwasher that uses less electricity to heat water. Water requires a certain amount of energy to heat. So anyway, that is, these are all the things we take into consideration when looking at a wind system. And also, people are starting to buy again the grow towers. This is something that, it goes in kind of waves. Recently, there have been more people buying these. The grow towers, you have your own vegetable production right in your house or in your bay window or out on your deck. Summertime is coming. You can leave these outside on a deck, or if you have a greenhouse, or just plain outside. You can put the grow towers, and they have a little pump that's on a timer. It's aeroponics, in other words, all of the nutrients and everything are in solution in water in the bottom, and the pump turns on every 15 minutes and sprays water on the roots. And high concentration, you can get up to 54 lettuce plants in a single tower, or microgreens, or tomatoes. Tomatoes do fabulous in these, where you have a constant supply of tomatoes. I've got personally a tomato plant. It's in regular dirt, but I mean this tomato plant produces enough tomatoes, you got to give them all away. You can't even eat all the tomatoes and produce that I'm producing. But there was a woman who bought just one tower, and she had to have her friends over, and she gave them all lettuce and tomatoes and cucumbers and everything just from one tower. So anyway, these are really a great unit, and it gives you your own fresh, organic, non-hybrid. This is the thing. When you go to buy organic in the grocery store, what you're getting is hybrid genetically modified seeds. That's what your food is being grown from. And when they say organic, it may mean human poop in Mexico. They've bent the laws so far. So, I mean, you don't know where you're. And the other thing is, even though it says organic, if that product has crossed the state line, it has been sprayed with insecticides and fungicides and everything else. And they just have to do that because of the chain of command of getting produce from the field to your grocery store and then having it still be in one piece by the time you get it home, put it in your refrigerator, and eat it. So even though it says organic, it's really not. It's got chemicals in there somewhere. And when you grow your own, you know that it does not have chemicals in it. So anyway, the grow towers are there on my webpage. The sales are still on from Christmas for an education package, the grow towers, the water filter stuff. All the sales are still on there from Christmas. So anyway, by the way, this has been happening. I really didn't expect it. I became a Generac dealer because of the wing generator stuff, but people have been just going there, or Duramax, also the portable generators. The people have been going there and then requesting quotes and for the backup generator. So that's available too, because I'm an authorized Generac dealer, or a Duramax dealer also. Anyway, okay, enough of that. I'm going to go talk about water now. Water, water, water. And the reason this came up is because somebody sent me a documentary. It just came out, I think it was the 21st of March, it was released. It was called DW. And so I don't really know what that stands for, but anyway, it's going around the internet, etc. But anyway, what they talk about there is the ownership of water. And they complain that this is being done by Wall Street, that water is being traded as a commodity, the water in a certain river, etc., is being traded as a commodity. And so people are assuming that they own these, that they have water rights. They're buying and selling them. And they point to the commodity traders as the problem. But let me explain something. I don't know who made this movie. And either they're really stupid or they are disinformation, one of the two. But the real problem with water started long, long ago, and it's with it goes all the way up the chain to the World Bank. When George Bush Sr. ended his presidency, He could have gone for a second term, but he handed off the baton to his old drug partner, Bill Clinton, to become president. And at that point, George Bush Sr. went up to the Bank of Canada, and with the Bank of Canada, which is part of the Bank of England, which is part of the World Bank system, orchestrated the ownership of water in the Western Hemisphere. That's what he was doing. At the same time, his son, who later to become president, George Jr., went to South America, and with family money, ill-gained from being president and head of the CIA and the drug trafficking and everything else, purchased a vast amount of land in Uruguay, or was it Paraguay? I forget. But anyway, they owned all of this land that just happened to be on top of the world's largest aquifer. And so this is the ownership of water and the people involved in this. So my point is that to direct your finger at day traders who are just, you know, no-name people on Wall Street or in trade centers, you know, in the NASDAQ or something like that, or there's a water exchange now, to point your finger at them is ridiculous. But here is some of the logic that comes out. And I mean, I like the video, but it's just completely misdirected as to who is causing this problem. But some of the fuzzy logic they were using here, this one trader says his logic for including water as a commodity is going, well, it's like oil, it's like other things. But he says that diamonds come from the dirt and they cost money, don't they? So that's his logic for putting water as a commodity. But the problem is 7 billion people in the world don't need diamonds every day to exist as part of their existence. You know, you don't need, I don't have diamonds, I don't want them, and I don't buy them, and I don't, you know, it's not part of my life. But water is. Water is very much part of my life, and I bet you it's part of your life. So for somebody to think that, well, diamonds come from the dirt, they're from a natural source, and therefore they cost money. And it's not really true either, because you can make artificial diamonds. You can actually fabricate them in a laboratory. So anyway, the logic really is not true. 7 billion people in the world every day need water, and it's essential. It's essential to your existence, and we, as a society, as a culture, as a species, if you want to call it that, I think that's a bad term. But anyway, as a species, we require water. We require water on a daily basis, more than a little. I think it's the World Health Organization and other places like that say that you need at least 5 gallons of water minimum per person per day. That's minimum. I mean, if you had 5 gallons of water, and I've lived on probably less than that in my life, because if you're near the ocean, you can swim in the ocean so you can get clean. You can do a lot of things. You can use seawater in toilets. You can actually do that. But when it comes down to drinking and cooking and washing your food and things like that, then you need fresh water. And it has to be bacteria-free. If you don't have clean water, you're in trouble. And that's the situation for the vast majority of the world. If you live in an area where you have abundant clean water, and even in the United States has some of the worst water in the world. You know, places like Tampa. Oh, my goodness. They desalinate, and then they mix chloramines into the water. This is the latest additive to water, which my filters, by the way, take out. If you live in Tampa, tell your neighbors, go get their filters and their filter elements from me, because my filters take it out, the chloramine out, all in one filter. Chlorine, arsenic, you know, very long list of chemicals, heavy metals, etc. Anyway, little self-promotion there. But 7 billion people in the world need water every day. So I'm going to go through the titles of my book here, and I'm going to, or the table of contents of my book, And I want everybody to take a look at this because, and by the way, I send this book out for free, so I'm not advertising to sell a book or something like that. The book is available if you buy any of my other products, my book products or related products, then this gets sent out for free as a complimentary gift. Okay, now I want you to get this book and read it. There are 36 chapters, 163 pages, and I'm just going to go through some of the topics here. And this really gets to the heart of the issue of water. Who owns it? Who's been vying for control of it? What is it used for? And it turns out that, by the way, just as an example, the whole thing about global warming and global climate change is control of water. That's what it's all about. Because, doggone, we got to cure this climate change and do all kinds of things to make sure that we have, austerity conditions for everybody on the planet. And it's a method of control, but it's mainly a control of water. That's what it's always been. That's what it always will be. The first thing I talk about in the book, Chapter 7, is a declaration of water independence. And this basically states that every human being has a right to water. And there are people that are in business that are trading water commodities, and they don't believe that. It's just like, well, if you can't afford it, you don't get water. And very strange, bizarre mentality, but that's unfortunately the mentality that's developed over the decades and decades, where people have gotten away from humanism, gotten away from caring about other people. And by the way, the whole situation at the border is a created situation. These countries live in poverty because you have 3% of the people in the country with all of the wealth and everybody else living literally in the dirt, literally living in the dirt. That's the world situation. That's the situation for 90% of the world's population. And even in the United States, there are people that are just at the very edge of existence. And as water becomes a commodity, which becomes more and more expensive, and as commodity traders and the people who own these going up to the World Bank, remember, the traders are just traders. They make a little bit of money off trading it today. Okay, that's the end of that. They don't own the water. They're trading it. You see the difference? They are simply moving the commodity that is literally owned by someone else. Okay, and it's like anything. If you own your house, say you have all the house payments made on your house. Your house, you say, I own it. Well, if you don't pay your taxes in 2 or 3 years, they're going to come and take your house. You don't own it. Let me tell you that, buddy. Just like the traders and the commodity traders don't own the water. They just keep it from you. They're the necessary evil, and the people that really own the water are way up the chain in the World Bank, the Vatican Bank. Okay, so a declaration of water independence basically states that every person has the right to water. In fact, I think I'll just read this verbatim because it's very necessary. Before I read this, I want to mention also that there are municipalities, states, and other entities which claim that you don't have the right to rainwater. If the rain falls on your property, you don't have the right to gather it and put it in a barrel and hold it there. That is not your water, according to some municipalities. So anyway, let me quick read this. And I think it's important to understand the concept here. It says, and this is when I released the book. It was in July of 2013. That's when this book was written. So it was not quite 10 years ago. It's about 8 years ago. So Declaration of Water Independence, 4th of July, 2013. This is when I wrote this, published this book. It says, we the people, remember that when the Declaration of Independence was written, it was written, that's the formation of the country, not the Constitution. The Constitution came later. But the Declaration of Independence was the one that said, okay, we have inalienable rights. The King of England has no business here. Get out of here. So listen to what I've written here. And this is not just me. There are other people that are doing the same type of thing. I'm reading now from the book, Chapter 12, Declaration of Water Independence. We the people declare that water is an inalienable right. The definition of inalienable is not subject to sale or transfer, inseparable. That which is inalienable cannot be bought, sold, or transferred from one individual to another. The current movement of governments, investors, including banks, corporations, and individuals to legislate and own water and dominate the distribution of water is by its very nature against the laws of the universe, as water is essential to life. Understand that the world does not have a water shortage problem. It has a water-manipulated water management problem, just as oil and energy are manipulated to control and create fast profits for a few. This extends also to other essential natural resources, including soil, air, and DNA. Now, I want to stop there for a minute. I wanted to read that part because right now there's a vaccine that's being forced on the public that changes your DNA, changes who you are. You become an experimental laboratory for some pharmaceutical company because you took a DNA-altering drug that they inject into your body. So I will also mention here that the real effects of the COVID vaccinations are going to be seen in 9 months from now, when the deformed babies and the babies with genetic issues start coming out, like hybrid corn. Everybody thought it was the best thing since sliced bread, but the end result is that hybrid corn has a lot of problems. It causes a lot of problems. It causes damage to the bee population, which is essential to crops growing, etc. And so the idea that water is an inalienable right is fundamental, that people have a right to water, and somebody does not have the right to trade it as a commodity. They don't have the right to do that, but they don't have the right to give you a vaccination either. If you let them do that, then they've taken your right away. You've given your right to someone else who's insisting that you do something, but like a lot of things, you just say no. Right now in Israel, isn't this the most ironic thing ever? That Israel, there are attorneys, the people in Israel are starting to wake up that they have been vaccine damaged, and it's not even a vaccine. It's not in the traditional sense a vaccine. But Pfizer came into Israel, and the Israeli government said, okay, we're going to be number one in the world with vaccinations, and they went and they vaccinated everybody. But now all of the damage is coming through. The people are dying. The people are having damage. And they're realizing that they got let into this by their government. Now, isn't it bizarre, ironic? I don't know what, you know, word you want to put on this. But the entire reason for The Hague, the world law regarding human experimentation without consent, is because of the Jewish people claim in World War II that they were experimented on by Hitler. That's where all of this came from the Nuremberg trials. And the Hague World Court is where this is now being brought by attorneys for the people of Israel. But didn't they think before they were getting the shot that, hey, wait a minute, we were experimented on in World War II. We're not going to do this again. Their government of Israel should have been the absolute first place on the planet to stop this. The mass injection of people with an experimental drug that's never been tested. And, you know, the United States should have been on all over this, because supposedly we fought World War II to end the war to end all wars, it was called. And that's what my dad happened to be in England as a repair technician on B-17s. They were told that this was the war to end all wars, that once you defeated Hitler, there wouldn't be any more wars. Wrong. But anyway, the whole idea was to they were attacking the rest of the world, and the thing that you hear constantly today is that the Jews were in concentration camps and the Germans were experimenting on them with medical experiments. And so the United States, which was dominant, and if it weren't for the United States, England would have eventually been overrun by Germany. There's just no question about it. They were able to withstand, I understand the 7 hours that saved England, the air war over Great Britain. The Battle of Great Britain was an air war. But eventually Germany would have overcome them if it were not for the United States. That was a stopgap method or an issue that held off the Germans long enough until the United States could get in there and beef it up and bring up their manufacturing production. Because the United States was not, remember, they were still using horses to haul cannons around and stuff like that at the beginning of World War II. Most of the European armies were still using horses. That all had to change. It had to become mechanized. You had to develop machines. The Normandy invasion took years and years of development to have all those ships and all those supplies and everything there for that, just that one day of invasion into northern France. So the point is that the United States should have been the absolute first country to say, no, you cannot inject all these people with some kind of experimental drug, put up red flags and said only people can volunteer if they're willing, and then the drug company should have paid them to find out experimental results. The United States should have been the very first country, at least the very second one. Israel should have absolutely been the very first. And now after the fact, they're taking their own government to court in the Hague World Court because of unauthorized experiment, coerced experimentation on the human population of the entire country, which is all Jewish. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Anyway, holy cow, look at the time here. I've got 45 seconds left. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. I didn't have time to get through the whole table of contents, but get my book. It's free. Water, it's called, on my webpage. With any purchases, you get it for free. Or just send me an email, and I'll send it to you for free. jmccsci.com. Go there. The wing generator, all of the things are still on. You'll still see Christmas sales, all those reduced prices, etc. And, all of the things that are essential for you to become independent, the education program. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.